Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Jamie Baines. Today's guest is Christina Bencala, formerly of the Richmond Police Department. Christina worked for the Richmond Police Department for 13 years, then left to do investigations for the state. She and I speak about her time with the department and experiences that she had as a police officer. We cover a lot of ground in the interview, so I'm going to keep this intro short. I hope you enjoy the interview. And welcome back to the podcast. Today's guest is Christina Bencala. How are you, Christina?
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Give us a little of your background. You were a police officer with Richmond for a little while, correct?
For about 13 years.
And what year did you start in? And how did you get started in police work?
So I went to VCU for undergrad and grad, and I actually always just wanted to be in the field, basically doing forensics. And I found that you can't really do that unless you're sworn. Mm-hmm. So I ended up doing a couple of ride-alongs. I interned with Henrico, applied with Henrico. I also applied with the city. It's just that the city responded back faster. So so I did the whole academy thing and was there for a little while.
With Richmond?
With Richmond, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where did you start out in Richmond? You were in patrol. What precinct were you in?
I was Sector 312 in 3rd Precinct. So I had the Midlothian Turnpike Corridor, Forest Hill, Westover Hills, that area of South Richmond.
And from patrol, where did you go?
So I went to 3rd Precinct FMT Property Crimes. Well, before that, I was on the HOPE unit, which we did. It was Homeless Outreach Partnership and Enforcement. It was a brand new unit, and which was only supposed to be 9 weeks long. But from what I understand, they're still there in a unit. But I just really missed being in police work. So I went back to patrol in 312. And then I went to, I made detective and went to property crimes at 3rd.
And how long were you in property crimes for?
I think I was there for 2 years before I went to major crimes.
And major crimes is aggravated assaults like shootings, stabbings, also sexual offenses, correct?
Yes, all life-threatening shootings, stabbings, and all sexual assaults and rapes, yes.
And did you enjoy the work up there, the investigations?
I loved it. It was my favorite unit. It was very hard work and it consumed your life. But I worked with awesome people just like you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. When you say consume your life, a lot of people, I think, don't realize the amount of effort and energy that detectives put into their work. Can you talk about that a little bit? Like, how did it consume your life?
Well, you're essentially married to your cases. There were times that I have slept in the office just because it's not worth going home and then turning right back around and going to court. Or, you know, when one of the marshals picks up your fugitives, you literally have to drop everything that you're doing, even if you're off, to come into the office to interview your suspect. At any point, a crime solvers or crime stoppers tip can come in, and then you're basically gung-ho back at the office, even on your days off. So just to solve the case and, you know, get some headway with it. So there have been times where even on your days off, you're not really off and you're tied to your phone. There were times where, you know, my husband at the time and I would be at dinner, and then I would get a notification from the marshal saying that they'd picked up my suspect and I would have to leave. And then who knows when I would be coming back home, mm-hmm. just based on like how well the interview went. So,
and the cases keep on coming in. It's not like you just get one case and are able to work that till the end. You're like, "Ooh, I can take a break." You continue to get cases, right?
Oh, right. And so even if it was your weekend, your day shift weekend, you know, we would catch whatever came in during day shift. So, you know, I had some natural deaths. I had some suicides. I had a couple of times, actually, when I was the only detective during day shift, I had a police involved shooting, a murder, suicide. I mean, it was, you get everything mm-hmm. there.
And now you're no longer in with the police department, but looking back, I've asked a lot of police officers about this, like the events of last summer with the social unrest, and whether you want to call it, you know, unrest or riots or protests or all three, maybe a difference. What were your thoughts when those were going on?
Do you want my true thoughts, or
absolutely.
Do you want my very politically correct thoughts?
No political correctness here. Whatever your thoughts are, I want to hear them.
So I get why people were upset. I do. Do I personally agree with how Officer Chauvin handled that situation? No, not me personally, but I also know what it's like to have a growing crowd, have an unruly prisoner. So I don't really know what I would have done in his situation. Do I think that he could have handled it better and have done something else? Absolutely. But, you know, being a police officer, you just don't know. And also with the condition of your prisoner, I mean, you don't know what an hour before your encounter was like, what they did, what anything. Anyways, that's my own personal opinion. Mm-hmm. And as far as it being racial, I find that racism is a very black and white issue, but nobody ever wants to discuss the racism between, you know, with involving Asians or Middle Easterns or Latinos and Latinas and stuff like that. And being in the police department, we saw, well, I can say for me specifically, those people that were fighting for Black Lives Matter and racism in a whole really weren't fighting for racism as a whole, because as being a police officer and considered a minority police officer, we, you know, and I'm only speaking for myself.
And you are of Asian and Arabic descent, correct?
Yes. So my dad is Middle Eastern and my mom is Korean. So I got everything from, you know, I don't know, like the people that we serviced in the city are very, I guess, low socioeconomic status. And that's a lot. That's just how Richmond's made up. Mm-hmm. But the amount of racism that I found just from the citizens of Richmond in certain areas that I worked was baffling. And then to have this huge rioting and protesting, but where are the riots and the protests for the Asians or the Middle Easterns or, you know, or anyone else? And I found that a lot of the racism came from the citizens that we were sworn to protect and serve.
And there's one case in particular that was very, to me, very disturbing, and it happened against you, and it probably would not have gone anywhere, at least in the public eye, unless one detective told a reporter and a reporter was able to get it out there. Can you give a little background on it and what happened?
Yeah, it was actually like right before I left the police department to go to the state. It was the craziest in all the years that I worked off duty, which, you know, it's, we didn't get paid a lot in the police department, and it's still a problem. So I had to work off duty.
And off duty, you're working in uniform, correct? Usually you're a detective in plain clothes, but off duty, you're actually in uniform, right?
Yes, okay. Full uniform, and we are hired through the city to basically do security in some places. So my main off duty was in Hillside Court, which was one of the best off-duty gigs that I ever had, and everyone thinks that I'm crazy, but that was King's Market. And I was also doing security for three bars downtown during this particular incident. I've never had an issue except for this one time, and it was on St. Patrick's Day. And I was standing out there, and a group of people had gotten kicked out of the bars. One of them went actually behind a bar and stole bottles of liquor. So rightfully so, they were kicked out. They were being disorderly and unruly. And I basically went up to them because they refused to leave. And I said, there are four or five other establishments next to this place. Please just go somewhere else. You know, there are so many places that you can choose from, like basically giving them a pass, you know, just go somewhere else. Just don't stand here. Just go somewhere else. And this female ended up coming up to me and it was like wanting to fight me. Which I thought was kind of crazy. She was really intoxicated. And I said, look, I'm giving you a pass. I really don't feel like going to lock up at, you know, 12:30 at night during an off-duty shift. You know, just go. Like, take your friends, go somewhere else, go home. It's not that big of a deal. Come back next week. And she just started like almost bucking up to me, and she pushed me, and I wasn't going to have that. And so I basically got her, attempted to get her in handcuffs, and she spit in my face and would not comply. And it was me and two other officers. And of course, all of the attacking was directed towards me. I don't know if it was because I was the only female, or, you know, I was a minority, or what. But she was an African-American female. She was fairly young. So I ended up, like, she just would not stop. And I, the only thing I could do was to basically calm her face and kind of push it away because she was actively spitting on me. And everyone said it was, and I don't even remember this, that it was the slap that rang down in the Chaco Bottom. Like, everybody heard it, but it made her comply. And it was I thought it was a pretty decent stunning technique, and she complied, and we got her in handcuffs. We waited for the wagon for transport. I met her down back at the Sallyport, and I was charging her with assault on a police officer and drunk in public. And filling the CCRE, which is the state form, for processing, processing your suspects or whatever. One of the lines was, who is your employer? And I asked if she worked, and she said yes. And I asked her what she did, and she said that she was a teacher, which surprised me because of her behavior. And she called me, she basically was calling me a chink and telling me to go back to my own country and all these things, which I'm obviously an American citizen. I was born here, where am I supposed to go back from? But if I were to say that to somebody on the street, I would have gotten fired.
Right.
But we're just expected to just take it. And she called me a racist, which I was like, I've never once said anything racial towards you or derogatory, but the entire evening you have made racist comments and it's not the same. And that's the problem, is that nobody looks at it as the same. But to me, it's worse because it's supposed to be okay. Any other racist to be racist to is okay, except I don't know. Like, I feel like
so you sound frustrated. That is very frustrating. That
it is very frustrating. It really is, because we're just supposed to take it, and it's not the same form of racism, and it absolutely is. And in my book, it's a million times worse because people think that it's okay.
And racism really is, it's a multi-way street. It's not just from one race to another race. It's anybody of any race can be racist.
It's so not a black or white issue. It's black, white, brown, yellow, orange, and like everything. It's just not straight black and white.
And this, didn't she tell you something also about what she teaches her kids?
This is
back to the teacher.
Yeah. So she was a third grade teacher at one of the city elementary schools over in Southside. And she said to me that, because I basically called her racist, and she was like, no, I teach all my kids not to listen to the police because all police are racist. Yet again, I never said one derogatory or racial remark, but she must have said at least 20 to me in that 2-hour encounter that I had with her.
My experience has been that police, let me know if you agree or not, police officers tend to be the least racist people that I've ever met, because we deal with so many different types of people. Good, bad, of all different colors and creeds and everything.
Absolutely. And we're basically, I'm not going to say that all police officers are. I would say that the majority of us are, and there are one or two that give everybody a bad name. Mm-hmm. But you'll find some racism within the department as well, between other police officers that I found. But I think as a whole, we're there to serve one purpose, and that's the residents and the taxpayers and the employees and everyone that lives in the city of Richmond. And our common goal is to make the city as safe as we possibly can, and to take the troublemakers out of the equation. And I don't know how that can be viewed as racism, because we're basically making it safe for everyone else to live and to enjoy their lives. And I think that is a stigma that a lot of police officers have, is that especially in a very urban setting, I can't speak for the counties or the surrounding jurisdictions or other departments, but with the city, I just wish it people on both sides would understand that it's not if you're going to scream racism, then you need to scream racism for all the races, not just one.
Well said. Well said. Whatever happened with that case, Christina, in court, and what happened to her, do you know?
So she appealed. Well, she came to court. It was Judge Cheek, which, if anyone knows Judge Cheek, I thought he was awesome. We'll give you a lecture, and I don't know what's worse, like a sentence, a jail sentence, or getting one of Judge Cheek's lectures. But he basically made her, well, she was fired because I had to let our Unit 9 know that I was arresting a city employee.
And Unit 9 is basically the acting chief at night, correct? That's like the top person we talk to.
Correct. Okay. And then Unit 9 lets whoever else know in, I guess, with Richmond Public Schools or City Hall or what. I don't know. But she lost her job with Richmond Public Schools immediately after that. Mm-hmm. And so she came to court, and Judge Cheek made her go to anger management and cultural diversity classes, which I doubt that she did. Waived her jail time, but she was charged with drunk in public. And I think the assault on a police officer was no pros. But she ended up appealing it because obviously she wouldn't be able to teach anywhere with a misdemeanor. I mean, I'm sure she could somewhere, but and she appealed it, and it never went back to court. So I guess she didn't follow through with the appeal process. I don't know, but I never saw her after court again.
Did she apologize to you in court?
Absolutely not. Oh. No.
I thought you were going to say absolutely, but absolutely not.
Yeah, absolutely not. No. And the news was there, you know, they sat through the whole court proceeding, and I'm sure in some aspect she was viewed as a martyr or hero or whatever, voicing her opinion. But if I were to call her a quarter of what she called me or told me, I would seriously be fired and be considered a racist.
Moving forward, Christina, what do you think do you think it's hard for people to talk about race?
Well, nowadays, I think, you know, I think everyone's afraid to talk about it, but I'm in the mindset that let's talk about it. Let's make it, you know, uncomfortable. Let's hash everything out. It's got to be uncomfortable for it to get better. Mm-hmm. But the way that, you know, protesting and doing all the wrong things to get your voice heard, I don't agree with that. I'm all about, you know, maybe peaceful protesting, mm-hmm, or stuff like that. But when you're defacing and causing millions and millions of dollars of city money that could be going elsewhere, it could be going to funding our police, giving our teachers better pay, you know, having enough ambulances right out there. What is that solving? It's not solving anything. And now I feel terrible for all the people that, you know, worked hard their entire lives to have a Monument Avenue address, and they look out their window and it's desolate. It looks like a war zone, basically, in that corridor of Monument Avenue. And it's just sad. There are other ways that people can discuss anger and how they feel and their treatment. It's just, I don't agree with that.
How do you bring back to the forefront, like you said, that racism is everywhere against all people? Because you're right, because occasionally there'll be a news story about Asians being assaulted somewhere, being yelled at, but then that story disappears, and it gets out of the narrative, and it goes back to the same old thing back and forth. How do you get that back in there? Or what do you think the solution is? I know it's a tough question. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but what do you think?
I don't really think that there will ever be a solution, to be quite honest with you. I think that it's always been like this. You know, it started with the jokes with the Asians and the railroads, and, and then after 9/11, like all of, if you were of Middle Eastern descent, you were, immediately a terrorist. I don't know what the solution is, because I think it's been such a problem that, and it's been a problem that no one wants to fix. You know, like, you can say that you protest and you're angry and you want to burn stuff and, because you're angry. Well, let's come up with a solution that can solve that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I don't see, the Irish protesting. I don't see a lot of, like, the Asians and the, during Pearl Harbor were placed in working internment camps in the United States. Where is the outrage and outcry for that? And that was way more recent than slavery, but it's okay to do that. But it's not okay for, somebody else who's a different race. Do you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely, I do.
It's okay for one group to be upset, but it's not, nobody cares if it's anyone else.
Right. And I don't know how to fix it either. I mean, I think we all, like you said, we all need to come together and have these hard conversations and to hash it out and to be honest with each other. And it's not going to be easy. It absolutely is not, because people are going to get their feelings hurt or, think this, that. But other people have said as well, you can't just automatically scream racism if you're talking about the races and you're trying to, like you said, hash it out, hash the problems out.
Yeah, like, a very good police officer who is a detective, an SOD, always said to me, and I always, like, this line will always stick with me. It will get uncomfortable before it gets better. It will be uncomfortable until it gets better. And we have to have those, talks where it's not friendly, it's not nice, it's uncomfortable, but we hash everything out. And the only way we can do that and get past all of this is through discussion. And unfortunately, with, the mayor, and nobody wants to discuss it. Nobody wants to talk about it. They want to do all these things, but it's not addressing the problem. Removal of a statue or two from 100 and whatever plus years ago, the underlying issue is still there. By removing a statue or defacing city property or causing a whole bunch of property damage in the city, the underlying root of all the problem is still there.
And people are still getting killed. They're still getting assaulted, still getting shot.
Even worse now.
Right.
It's, ma'am, you couldn't ask me to come back to the police department right now. You couldn't pay me, I would say it wouldn't be worth it to me. I just could not I can't fathom what the officers are dealing with now. And my heart goes out to them because, unfortunately, leadership, I feel like, is scared. And nobody wants to address the problem. And they just keep on putting a Band-Aid over everything and putting on blindfolds. And it doesn't solve anything. It makes the city more dangerous. It makes working in the city more dangerous. It makes working for the city more dangerous. And I work in the city. Mm-hmm. I might not be a city police officer anymore, but you know, all of our state offices are in the city. So I don't know. I see it on an everyday basis, and I don't voice my opinion because, you know, I could say something about where's Asian equality or where's Middle Eastern equality, and it would quickly be diminished and turn into Black Lives Matter or that I was being racist. But am I really? I'm not.
No, I mean, you're not. And that's, yeah. I mean, truly, that's the thing. That's part of the hard conversations we need to have. You're not being racist. You want to be heard. And unfortunately, a whole lot of people are not being heard because they're getting drowned out by either larger narratives or larger organizations. Right. And it's not fair.
No, it really isn't. And being biracial, you know, like you see both aspects, and being considered a minority on both ends.
Both ends.
You know, like
you're right. I had never heard of it described that way, but it is. You're right. It's being a minority on both ends.
Being a minority on both ends, like you. I don't fit in with the Asians. I obviously don't look Middle Eastern. I look very different, and I feel like my entire life I've just kind of had to morph into whatever surrounding I was put into. So, you know, like I think of racism and I think of my entire life almost, you know, and I know I'm not the only one that feels that way.
And you know, that's,
but I also have enough sense in me to know that nothing's going to change. And if I spray paint something or break windows or, you know, loot and riot and do all those things, I know that it doesn't solve the problem.
And you made a very good point that I didn't. Well, you made it earlier when you said racism is black and white. That's how it's looked at. But not to you. Racism is versus Asian and Middle Eastern. And other people, I'm sure, feel the same way. They don't see racism as black and white. They see it as whatever race they are and whatever hatred is directed toward them.
Right.
It's all in perspective.
Right. And I saw, you know, white police officers being, you know, being on the other end of racism too in the city, you know,
being racist against them.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone has an instance. I guarantee you, black, white, Asian, Middle Eastern, mm-hmm. Hispanic, I guarantee you everyone has been affected by racism against them somehow, but it's not ever discussed because it's not a part of popular opinion.
Very, very good point. Nobody's ever made that before, but that's an awesome, well, to me anyway, but that is a fantastic point.
I mean, for as many times as I've been around really awesome, respectable, really good police officers that are Caucasian, you know, I very rarely saw the racism coming from our end, and I say our end being the police. But the racism definitely comes in all colors, and in all shapes too. I mean, like shape, sizes, women, men, like it's everywhere. Like we all just, you know, as Rodney King would say, can't we all just get along? Can't we all just like understand that we're all different and everyone brings a little bit of something to the table?
And embrace those differences. Embrace them.
We're all seasonings. You know, like...
It's not just salt and pepper. You've got oregano. You've got
cumin. You've got curry powder. Like, you can't just make a dish with one seasoning.
Because it's bland.
Yes. You've got to embrace all the seasonings and bring us all together to make this wonderful dish. And that's what I think.
And I think we're going to leave it right there because that is a perfect way to end this podcast. So thank you very
much. Back to food. Leave it to me.
Leave it right on food. Make it all nice and spicy. Nothing bland. Just put everything all in there. Thank you very much, Christina. You've been fantastic.
Thank you, Jamie.
All right. Well, I hope you come back on again.
Yeah, definitely ask me.
I definitely will.
All right.
All right. Take care of yourself.
Okay, bye.
Bye. That's it, guys. After the interview was done, I texted Christina multiple thumbs up because of how well she did. She replied that she thought people would hate her because of what she said. I replied, nah. But you know what? Some people may indeed hate her because of what she said. But so what? Everyone, and I mean everyone, deserves to have their voices heard and be given an opportunity to give their opinions about how they view this world. A point that Christina really drove home is that how you view racism is derived from your personal experience with it. Racism is not just black and white. It exists across the entire spectrum, and until we can all come to the table and have those uncomfortable conversations, we're just spinning our wheels. Humans come in all different colors, like the spice analogy Christina gave. We should embrace each other because of our differences and enjoy each other for who we are. Ignore the people who want to divide us. Take care of each other and treat others the way you want to be treated. Thanks for listening.